This is Mouth Media Network, audio for business.
It's all of the moment, and now people are talking about it. But when we were launching, and it was like, oh, we're starting a laundry detergent company, everyone's like, are you out of your mind? You know, our parents thought we were crazy. We had these great jobs. I was leaving a 401k, which was like the holy grail to my parents. And it just sounded crazy. It was never crazy to us. We were extremely confident with what we were doing.
Success as an entrepreneurista can involve thinking ahead of the trend or even innovation, taking big risks, and thinking outside the box. In the case of Gwen Whiting, co-founder of The Laundress, a successful line of eco-friendly laundry and home products, it's all of these. Inspired with an idea while working in the fashion industry at Ralph Lauren and trying to maintain her wardrobe while using the local laundromat, Gwen teamed up with her friend who had a complementary skill set and was also encouraged by her then boss to go for it. Coming up, you'll hear how Gwen and her partner found money early on, from business loans to throwing for-profit parties to fundraise in the days before GoFundMe. How forward-thinking, such as launching an e-commerce website more than 15 years ago, when Amazon was still a bookseller, has been a powerful force for Gwen. About the challenges of building an e-commerce brand and generating buzz in the pre-social media era. How The Laundress got ahead of the market in creating detergents free of petroleum products long before the trend of green, eco-friendly products. Why the co-founders made a risky decision to fund the business by amassing considerable credit card debt rather than taking VC money. The process of selling the brand to Unilever, and why having the right lawyer and team behind you during such a pivotal time matters so much. This is the Entrepreneurista Podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done.
And what it takes to build and grow a successful company.
It's beyond the gram.
With no filters,
no limits,
and plenty of surprises. Gwen, so we met probably a little over, was it a month or two ago? Wait, time flies.
Yeah, October. Beginning of March. I mean, excuse me, what year is it? Beginning of November.
This is what happens after the new year. We have no idea what day or time this is. Yes, a few months ago, we both went to Cornell, and I had heard about you and your business, and we met. I knew that you were the perfect guest to share your story. So thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you co-founded your business with also a fellow Cornellian, correct?
Correct, yes.
How did this business come to be? Because you were working in the fashion world, and now you started a company that's selling different types of detergents. So how does that happen?
Yes, exactly. So I was working at Ralph Lauren, and I had this amazing wardrobe that I was amassing through sample sales. But my first income, and it was the advent of the $100 jean and the 50 plus white t-shirt. And I was struggling. I was living in a 6th floor walk up, and there was no washing machine in my building. And I was going around the corner to use the fluff and fold and getting my wash done in like 2 loads. At least I separated. And then I was taking my finer laundry home to my mom's house in New Jersey on New Jersey Transit and hand washing my sweaters and, you know, keeping my white t-shirts, trying to keep them pristine and all this stuff. And I was driving around New York with my boss, and I was telling him about all of my laundry problems and how I knew everything was washable, but there was no great product, and there was the laundry, and then there was the dry cleaner, and all there was to buy in the U.S. was like Woolite or Tide, and it wasn't sufficient. And I was telling him that I had this idea for a business, and I said, I have this idea. I need this product, and I want to make this all these products that are specific for the cashmere sweater, the dry clean items that don't need to be dry cleaned, the pit stain, the jeans, and the whole thing. And I said, you know, it'd be amazing to have this institute in New York where we could actually do the service, but really have the proper products to do it properly. And he turns to me and he says, Gwen, it sounds like the laundress. So
that was it.
That was it. And that was the conversation. And then a couple weeks later, I came back to, I was probably away for like a long weekend or something. And I come back to my desk and there is a photocopy taped to my computer monitor and it's highlighted and it says the course is how to start your own laundromat. And this is from my boss who left this for me on my computer and he was so excited. So I went to his desk and he's like, oh, did you see my note? And I said, yeah, yeah. He's like, I'll pay for you to go to class if you need me to. And I was like, oh my God.
What a great boss.
I was like, oh, next level. So I was like, okay, well, I can afford the class. So that was it. I signed up for a class on how to start a laundromat.
What year was this?
I incorporated the business in 2002.
Okay.
So it was 2002.
And how did you and your business partner decide to start the business together?
So Lindsay and I met in college and we were studying at Cornell in the textile and apparel department. I was a design major, apparel design major, and she was apparel management. And we had had various other entrepreneurial interests. And we had similar family backgrounds where our parents owned their own businesses. And we had complementary skills where I was always like the design and creative, and she was in the sales element of the business. So the first, I had an idea after studying abroad in London, and her and I worked on it our senior year in college, and she started a job after school, and I, you know, was the design major, so I didn't have a recruited job after Cornell. And so we worked on that a little bit and sort of paused afterwards, and this idea still hasn't happened, so there's still an opportunity all this time. So we always had this interest in working together, and we knew that we had complementary skill sets. And so now we were out of school about 5 years and had our corporate experiences, and we were friends and hanging all the time. And I asked her if – I told her the idea and asked her if she was interested, and she was, and there we went from there.
So she was working at the time when you
– Yeah, so yeah. She was working at Chanel.
Okay.
And I was working at Ralph Lauren. We had dream jobs, you know, the two sort of best houses. And really, we both loved our jobs, like really loved our jobs. We loved our coworkers. Obviously, I had the best boss that you can imagine. But we knew that, you know, our future and longevity in that role was the, like, I looked around, the future of my Ralph Lauren career was, you know, you're like a lifer and you, or you marry yourself off, sort of like the landscape of the people who work there. Both of our bosses and other coworkers were there forever. And it was kind of like the future was the future. Yeah. And, you know, we just always knew that we wanted a business and that we had the skill sets to work together. And this was the idea. And we both had our corporate experiences, which were extremely valuable. Yep. I stress that no one just started a business right after college. Yep. So it was the time and it was the idea. And
did you quit your jobs before you had really launched the business, or were you
doing it on the side? No. So incorporated in 2002. And we launched in 2004.
Okay.
So it's a 2-year concept to market journey. And even after we launched in March, we launched with an SBA loan. So we had a $100,000 loan. That was the only money we had. And Lindsay left for September. She was first. And then I started full time in January. So the whole time was moonlighting and every which way, shape, or form.
Well, that's definitely so exciting, and you're clearly a risk taker, and it definitely paid off. But I can imagine the early days were not so glamorous. Can you share with me a little bit about what those early days were like as you were trying to figure out how to develop products? And I'm sure there was a lot you had to figure out along the way.
Sure. So I feel like a fossil whenever I talk about this, because like 15 years ago, And then really 17 years ago from when you're from starting. And, you know, nothing was Googleable. There weren't a million podcasts telling journeys and stories and networking and groups. And, you know, the access today is so different than that landscape. And I had taken a class at Cornell in the Johnson School of Business, Entrepreneurship and Enterprise, and wrote a business plan in that course and developed a whole business and defense and presentation. So I had already done one. So I took my book, my course book, and Lindsay and I sat down and went point by point and wrote our business plan. So we had a full business plan developed before we even knew how to make soap. That was the first thing we did. And we can talk about the plan later, but, you know, and then everything falls into place when you have a plan.
Yeah.
So you know what you're doing. You know what you're trying to accomplish. Everything's crystal clear. You have your roadmap. We had every product that we ever wanted to make in that plan. So it's amazing. I'm so proud of that business plan because today all we do every year is just fill in the sales figures by SKU and then accomplishments. So, you know, the things that we launched along the way, you know, assign the date and launch and revenue attached to it. So it was very crystal clear what we wanted. So then we build from that. So we knew what products we wanted to make, what problems we wanted to solve, and then formulated back into it. So we knew we wanted to make a full collection of laundry products. And so we had to figure out how to make laundry detergent. Well, I remember that there was a professor at Cornell who was a PhD professor in textile department and fiber science, and she worked on detergency. So I sent her an email and I said, "Hi, I don't know if you remember me or Lindsay, but we were apparel design and management, and we have a concept we'd like to discuss for developing detergent. Would you be willing to meet with us?" And she wrote back right away and said, "How wonderful. Of course I remember you. I'd love to. Send me a list of your questions." So I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah.
Lindsay and I had a full list of all the questions and what we wanted to understand. What makes whites whites? What's up with a pit stain? How come this product says this and that says that? You know, why is it blue? Like all of these things. And
did she have all the answers for you?
Yeah. So she said, "Let's pick a date and come up and we'll work together in Ithaca." So I said, great. So in the very beginning, we didn't have any money. I mean, we could barely pay the rent and the laundry dry cleaning bills to begin with. So we decided that we would throw a for-profit party to fundraise.
This before GoFundMe,
GoFundMe, whatever. So we threw a for-profit party, which made perfect sense at the time because we were paying like $20 for like an open bar to like socialize. So we figured, oh, well, this is acceptable. People do this and we'll have a $30 fee. And anyone who wants to give us more money, they'll be super generous and they will. So we had put together a for-profit party at a bar in the West Village down the street from where I lived. And we invited friends and coworkers and family and ex-boyfriends and
anyone
who would show up and give us $30. So we had about $5,000 in our pocket, and that led us like go up to Ithaca and rent a car and pay for the bed and breakfast.
I love
and
this. Super scrappy from day
so
one.
So scrappy. And we couldn't even afford like a Kinko's photocopy. So we get to Ithaca. And we have our meeting with Kay, and she says, "Where would you like to begin? All of the questions that you asked, they're all in this mound of like 50 textbooks behind her chair with post-it notes coming out of everything."
Just give me the answers.
Yeah, this is Cornell. They don't just give you the answers. She gave us the books to read to learn the answers. So we had a full crash course on like detergency and molecular structure and everything. And then we took all those books to the library and made the photocopies. And then we were downtown at Kinko's photocopying all night. And I still have all of those photocopies.
That's awesome.
that was the initial product development. But that was really what was our learnings of really formalizing our vision to science. And then from there, we were able to then start sourcing a chemist with the contract manufacturer and from then, you know, packaging and the journey from there.
Who were your first customers?
Well, when we launched in 2004 at a trade show in New York at the Javits Center. And I sort of designed and built the booth and had Lindsay's dad. I was like rolling this giant armor that we had bought at a show, at like a antique show, and you know, kitting the whole thing out, totally arts and crafts, which is like sort of what I still do basically. And at that show, we amassed like our first 8 customers. And it was diverse, as our customers are today. And we had like a sweet linen store in Alabama and a store in the UK and sort of a small handful. And then our sort of like big claim to fame was Lindsay at Chanel had her customers were the upscale retailers and Bergdorf. And so she was doing all of these sales meetings. And so she went and had a sales meeting with Bergdorf on her lunch break at Chanel and got an order from them. So it was like a whole effort of all of this between getting orders from our contacts that we had and the show. But also we launched an e-commerce site in 2004, which doesn't sound like a big deal now. But at the time, I mean, Amazon was still selling books. Yep.
It was very early.
It was very early.
People were scared to put their credit card in online.
Yeah. And people just weren't buying product online, let alone a liquid detergent product. Yep. The stores that we were selling to were like, you can't have a website. You're going to be competing with me. And we're like, you're in Alabama. We can't possibly be competing with you. But the funny story about our e-com site was, to your credit card point, was that it was all a shell. It was a full site. You checked out, but you never entered your credit card because we couldn't afford the credit card processing software. So we got all these orders and then we would get an email like with like the name and the address and a phone number and the product. And then either one of us would call where we'd return an email and say, thank you so much for your order. We're so excited to ship it to you, but we just need to get your credit card number.
So you would just take it over the phone.
Take it over the phone and like manually enter it in.
That's amazing. Coming up, you'll hear about the challenges of building an e-commerce brand and generating buzz in the pre-social media era. As you know, here at the Entrepreneurista podcast, we are all about real stories and meaningful connections. I knew I was in my kind of podcast space when I started listening to the Going Beyond podcast with Randy Zinn. Randy is an author, entrepreneur, mother, and founder of Beyond Mom. Her podcast covers health, both body and mind, self-care, entrepreneurship, cultural disruption, as well as love, sex, and so much more. She interviews leaders, survivors, founders, authors, activists. But what I love most about this podcast is that it takes the typical conversation to that next level when I listen. And I feel moved by the conversation she has and really inspired to go deeper into the different parts of my life, both personal and professional. Randy isn't afraid to go there. Oh, and the Going Beyond podcast also hosts live podcast recordings where they dive into relevant and pressing topics. And they have discussions that are really relevant for women. Subscribe to this podcast. You definitely do not want to miss one of her events. The Going Beyond podcast is on iTunes, Spotify, and you can find more at beyondmom.com. going back to Cornell, I was just sharing this with you. So I remember I was actually one of the first users of Facebook. When Facebook first launched, they then released to all the Ivy League colleges. So we thought we were so cool that we got Facebook up at Cornell. And I remember I started using it and I said, this is going to be the way of the future. But I wasn't quite sure how back then, but I always just stayed on the forefront. And that's how I ended up starting this business. But for you starting your company, this was, as you said before, you know, e-commerce sites were first becoming a bit more popular back when you launched, but it was still very early days. And you launched this business really pre-social media. So how did you get the word out back then about your products? And then how has your marketing evolved over the years with all of the changes with social?
So when we launched, we had the website, which was unbelievable at the time. And I didn't realize that I had a friend that was an engineer who was also a graphic artist. And I didn't understand that. And she built our website. She worked on our logo and our labels. And I didn't understand that it wasn't normal for one person to do all the graphics, build the site, and make it work. Yeah. Like, I just thought that's what everyone did. Yeah. I didn't really understand that till years later. And I was like, what do you mean?
Everyone
doesn't do all of this. Like, why do I have to pay four people? So we were really lucky that we had a pretty functioning website at the time. No one would consider that now, but it was highly functioning at the time. And having that shell e-commerce. But what was really important about that was when we were getting press, I said, oh, well, what stores can you be located? You know, where can we buy it? Where's the credit? And we didn't have a huge portfolio of stores or a large retailer in the US. So we said, oh, you don't need that. You can just use our website. So that was very nuanced. Mm-hmm. I mean, a credit at a newspaper or a magazine was still like, oh, buy it at Bloomingdale's or oh, buy it here. So like, oh no, just thelaundress.com. That's where you buy it. So that enabled us to have this national press, mm-hmm. and international press even as well, with the website. And the community part is really interesting because we had from the very beginning a email address called Ask the Laundress. And it was on our website, and it was an open email for anyone to ask us any question, any laundering question, anything. And we had that. It still operates today if you email it. But that was our community. So we had people emailing from all over the world, wow. asking their laundry questions. And that is how we aggregated our community. And so for years, it was a one-on-one conversation. I replied to all of those wow. emails for years and years about, and it really got to and really understanding who our customer is and what their problems are and what their thought process is and why they're coming to us. And I would give advice on for issues that we didn't even have products for. Or if I knew that they lived abroad, I would be able to give some sort of parallel, you know, thing that could work. And the questions were very personal. And laundry is very personal to people. You know, I found a christening gown in the attic and I, you know, I don't want to ruin it. And what should I do? Or, you know, my mom's really sick and she's cancer and she's had a sensitivity to everything. Or I have this jacket and it's not only, you know, you could just say it's a down jacket, or it's a wool jacket, but it had to be like described of what brand it is and what color it is. And everything's super, super personal. And my favorite Ask the Laundress question was, I remember because I was in Argentina over Christmas and always replying on my BlackBerry to all these questions. And this girl's writing that she was on a party bus in Utah, had passed out in a pizza.
She gave you all this information.
The whole thing. And not only was it wasn't just a cheese pizza, it was a pepperoni pizza. And I'm thinking, oh my God. And on her brand new wool J. Crew coat, what to do? And I'm thinking, this girl did not need to tell me that she passed out on a party bus in a pizza box. She could have simply said I have pepperoni pizza on my jacket.
You should screenshot these archives and put them up as like an archive of questions on like your Instagram stories. People would love this.
I know. Samira, write that down. But I have the archive of yes. all of these emails from all of the years and some really classic ones. That's one of my favorite ones. You know, it's like, Dear Jenny, It sounded like a really fun party.
Gotta connect one-on-one.
Gotta connect. But that was building our community. Yeah. And then we aggregated all of those email addresses that later then became our newsletter. And then we started a fun email that was a thing, Gwen and Lindsay's favorite things, things we love. And we'd send out a newsletter with our picks and tips and how-tos. And that was like the early newsletters before signing up for a newsletter on the website and everything subscription and opting in and opting out and all this stuff. And it was very, very organic.
Yeah. No, I love that. And you, the two of you really positioned yourselves as the faces of the business. And you see that more so now. But I feel like back then you weren't seeing brands having the founders as the face of the business and being able to, like you said, connect one-on-one with your customers.
Right,
probably built this loyalty.
Yeah, and that the thing about the brand is it's very much our vision and our soul and our passion, and it comes out in the copy. And like, you know, there's been minor changes to it, but for the most part, the copy remains the same, you know, about the pit stain and about our jeans and about things lasting and our personal experiences and why we made this product and why it's important and all of our methodology of why it is what it is and how to use it and what goes with every product is as much about the education. So while we know we make a superior product and it smells amazing because we have amazing fragrances, it's very much about the how-to. We want to empower everyone to wash properly and not be afraid of it and have the best results and really have an amazing experience. We say we turn an everyday domestic chore into a luxurious experience.
I love that. So your beautiful products are sitting right in front of us. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the products that we're looking at, and which one was your very first product?
Sure. So there's so much backstory, so much to talk about. When we were at Cornell researching our formulas, what also came up was the main surfactant system, the main cleaning ingredient that at the time, now less, it's more common to not use petroleum because now everyone knows about it. But at the time, we learned that the petroleum the majority of petroleum of surfactants are made from petroleum. So, and everyone used them because they were cheap. But we weren't trying to make a price competitive product. We were trying to make the best product. So we ended up with a full plant derived, green, eco-friendly cleaning collection by sort of coincidence because it was the best. And that's contrary to at the time when you're like, oh, it's eco-friendly, you just assumed it didn't work because the majority of eco-friendly products at the time were, you were using it because they were eco. You weren't using it because it was your best product out there. But one of the main goals for us was not to dry clean. So we really were trying to accomplish not dry cleaning, which is why our first two SKUs was the Wool and Cashmere Shampoo and the Delicate Wash. But the whole brand really blossomed from the Wool and Cashmere Shampoo because, you know, my Ralph Lauren cashmere sweaters. And in my early days, I worked at the cashmere bar. But, you know, every single sweater generally says dry clean or dry clean only. And wool and cashmere specifically are really meant to be washed and really
Most people don't know that.
They don't know that. Yeah. And it's because everything's labeled incorrectly.
Why is that?
Why? The fiber content should be accurate on a label, but the how-to instruction is up to the manufacturer. And the manufacturer will give the easiest and best advice for them not to be liable. So if you put a dry clean ticket on an item and something happens to it, then you can blame your dry cleaner for something happening to it versus the manufacturer of something happening to it.
Insider tips we're getting
there. There you go. So the concept of the collection was really not to dry clean. The Wool and Cashmere and the Delicate Wash were our firstborn for not dry cleaning and being able to wash most items that are labeled dry clean, which is the Delicate Wash is silk and synthetics and all of those other garments that you have that are labeled dry clean, whether it's a polyester.
I'm sure this sweater is labeled dry clean only with the stuff on
here.
Yeah,
I'm sure. And then the other big methodologies to the collection was our start to finish laundry collection, which is our classic scent, which is goes from stain to starch. And what didn't make any sense for us was if you're buying laundry product in the grocery store, all of those products are made from different manufacturers and they all have different fragrances. So you'd have one detergent that smelled one way, a fabric softener that smelled another way, all the way leading to a starch that had its own scent. And so you had like 5 scents in one load. So we, all of our products are designed that you have a consistent fragrance experience. So the baby scent has a baby softener, which we call conditioner. The signature goes all the way stain to starch. The stain is unscented, so it pairs with all of our other detergents and washes and so on.
Wow. So it's incredible how you've really developed this entire line. And I would assume it's because your customers were telling you that they wanted more.
Yeah. So our laundry collection was launched with 13 SKUs. So it was pretty robust at the start. And then we added a few along the way that were obviously in the original business plan, but we couldn't afford to launch everything at once. But when we launched home cleaning, I think that was in 2008, that was really because of our customers. It was a scary decision to, you know, we're the laundress and we're leaving the laundry room. But the home cleaning collection was because our customers were like, we love your products. We love the laundry. But what do you recommend for the home? And we're like, Seventh generation.
It was time.
And we developed that collection to be really tight, whereas we have a vast collection for laundry and fabric specific. But for the home, we wanted a really tight collection because there was so much redundancies and classification in where there was a toilet cleaner and a counter cleaner and a kitchen cleaner and a bathroom, like everything was just redundant. Yeah. I'm like, this is silly. Like we can really, you only need like a few products.
Keep it simple.
We need a surface cleaner. We need a glass cleaner. We need an all-purpose cleaner. Let's make this happen, you know, and everything we make is very thoughtful and purposeful. Yeah. We don't make SKUs just to make SKUs or add something to the shelf. It's very with purpose. And our overarching eco-sustainability was, you know, it's funny because it's all of the moment and now people are talking about it. But when we were launching, it was like, oh, we're starting a laundry detergent company. Everyone's like, are you out of your mind? You know, our parents thought we were crazy. We had these great jobs. I was leaving a 401k, which was like the holy grail to my parents. And it just sounded crazy. It was never crazy to us. We were extremely confident with what we were doing. Yeah. We knew we needed it. And we knew that there was an absolute need and function. And therefore, it would be responded to.
Coming up, you'll hear about the process of selling the brand to Unilever and why having the right lawyer and team behind you during such a pivotal time matters so much. You can connect with us at socialflyny.com and follow us on Instagram at Entreprenistas. Check out all our latest episodes at entreprenistapodcast.com. I think something that's remarkable is that you and your business partner started this business. You guys did not raise money. As you continue to grow and scale this business, you didn't need to. Can you share how you were able to scale your business without raising funding? And then I know you recently sold your business, so congratulations.
Yes,
that is such an accomplishment.
You.
And I want to hear more about what that process was like selling your business.
It's not that we didn't need to raise money. We never had any money, so the money was always an issue. We started with a $100,000 SBA loan, which sounded like, you know, a windfall, but half of it went to our first production run, and then we had to sell the goods. So it was constantly a hand-to-mouth, you know, you produce, you sell, and keeping up ahead of a, you know, two-month lead time was always hand-to-mouth. We put our hands over the dam with credit cards. A lot of credit cards. So between 2004 and 2008, when the market crashed, we had amassed about $250,000 of credit card debt.
Wow.
The credit cards dried up after 2008. So the debt didn't go away, but there were no new cards coming in.
You were capped.
We were capped out. Yeah. And then we were doing bank loans and lines of credit and everything that way. But we didn't raise money because we had taken every meeting with the VCs and the PEs and all of those people along the way. And it never made sense to us. And we didn't understand the economics and giving so much away and the valuations. It just never made any sense to us. We also heard every worst story out there. Mm. So that doesn't help. And we're product people and creative and developers. We're not fundraisers. Mm. So it just wasn't part of a comfort level or DNA, and it just didn't make any sense. So we just never did it. And it was organic every year. You know, you hustled and you built and you sold, and we had our three revenue streams. We had our wholesale, our U.S. domestic wholesale. We had our e-commerce that evolved that eventually we could take a credit card on. So that was an instant, you know, instant cash return. And then we had an international business where we had shipped internationally since the beginning as well. And we had a number of international key partners that we were shipping products to every month as well. So we sort of had this hybrid of income and orders and being able to sustain that way and really build and grow. And again, this is before you had major ad spends that you would be able to blow on Google Ads or on media that wasn't really, you know, you could buy it. Magazine ad placement.
Right.
But, you know, that was.
Did you ever do that?
No, of course not. We don't have any money.
No budget, yeah.
No money. You like do creative things and you got actual real PR.
Yep.
So there was no shortage of being a laundry expert, you know, of real simple. They always wanted, you know, needed advice. And so we were the experts of laundry, and we were the brand that had the inherent how to. We weren't just like a Tide or a Woolite, or like, who is that brand voice? Who is that person to even speak to? You know, someone in like the science department?
Yeah.
You know, so we are and were the experts in making videos. Like you just said that you watched the Pit Stain video. Well, I don't know which version you watched, but the original.
It was a new one.
The original videos are like a fright of the archive, but.
Hey, those would actually perform really well on social because everyone wants the organic,
old school, unedited, like scary. But that was how we got our word out, and it was really just being creative and organic and speaking to the brand and with the passion and the how-to, and that environment, you know, just continued to grow and grow and grow as e-com grew and as social grew, and just gave us a bigger platform.
When were you able to start paying yourselves?
Well, we had to pay ourselves early because we didn't have any other money.
Right.
So we had to make it work and make it
quick.
That
was the only option, yeah.
The only option. There was no other money or funding or parental support. This was it.
And how did you know when it was time to potentially sell the business? Were people knocking on your door that they were interested?
So from the original business plan, the goal was always to sell. Mm-hmm. It was always that we would build this business. We had an incredible vision, but we knew we could only take it so far, especially organically. Right. And our business plan was written off of roughly around Bliss Spa and Bumble and Bumble. And at the time, those two brands were a niche service and product markets. Yeah. Now it's like whatever. But for instance, the Bliss Spa model, the idea was that there was one spa in New York and you could have your body scrub and your, you know, Bliss scrub and body butter, but you could have that anywhere in the world if you could just buy that scrub and that body butter, and you could be in Tokyo or in Paris or whatever and have that Bliss spa experience at home. So that was really the model that we had, where we would have our one institute in New York City that was like the laundry mecca. And But anyone in the world could have the laundress experience in their own home. And, you know, this was in the very early onset where just there was a handful of brands. It was like Bobbi Brown and Hard Candy. And it was like this like frenzy of any product or Stila. Like yeah. There were brands that were coming to market and being acquired within a year. It was nuts. I mean, Estee Lauder was just grabbing every indie brand out there. And LVMH bought Bliss and they turned over a couple of different times. But it was – that was the environment pre-2008. Yeah. So – We always wanted or expected a plan to be acquired by, you know, a big consumer product company, and we were getting to the point we were really looking to be going to market a year after our acquisition, but we finally opened our store in New York.
What year is this now?
It was 4 years ago.
Okay.
And that brick and mortar was in the plan. And we thought, you know, and in our original plan, we thought we were going to be launching with it, but with $100,000 and half of it going to production,
not getting retail space in New York.
That wasn't happening. So we, you know, had to make a decision if we were going to find more money or make it, raise it or whatever, or work with what we had. We decided to work with what we have, which was the right move for us. And that's the route that we always went. So we finally were able to make that store come true. And that was really every year we had our profits and we rolled them over to another project, you know, whether it was building a new website. You know, that's a huge expense and that was a project. And then it got to, you know, we had enough money that we could now put towards that store. And the store was very important to us because we really – it was still undone. It's unfinished business. But we really needed to have our community have an experience and be able to understand the brand and understand it through our lens and our experience. And so we have a beautiful little store in Soho, and where you can buy the whole collection and you can buy special products that are only at the store. And our team is trained to, you know, laundress experts. So they're answering questions and doing how-to tutorials, and people come and bring their items with them to ask how, you know, how to clean.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, it's a full service down there. But that really, that gave us our platform and the visual of the brand. And it also gave us that space where 2 years ago, someone from Unilever walked in. And I got a call and it said, you know, one of the women at the store was like, Gwen, someone from Unilever's here. I think you should come down and meet them. I was like, can you pass the phone? So I had a brief chit chat with this guy and was like, what are you, you know, trying to understand what he was really doing. Was he like taking photos? Was he buying samples? Like really what's happening here? And that started our conversation with them.
So what was that process like actually selling your business? And can you share advice to other entrepreneurs who maybe are in talks with potential companies who are looking to acquire their business? And are there lessons that you learned along the way that you wish you knew? A couple questions there.
So many questions. So along the way, you know, because we knew this was a goal, and along the way, you keep having meetings. You're like, can you kind of explain how this process works, like a step-by-step, you know, valuations, procedures? And every person that we spoke to, whether it was a banker or a lawyer or whomever, was like, oh, every time's different. And we're like, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
Like, just give us some overarching, are we making presentations? What are we doing? And so we've still never had that understanding. So now they show up and we schedule a meeting. We go to New Jersey to the Unilever headquarters and, you know, we have this incredible meeting. And they're like, we want you to be part of the Unilever family. Do you want to join?
Just like that.
Like, am I joining a sorority? Like, what is happening here? Like, we're like, yeah, of course we want to be part of the family, you know, but then what?
Yeah.
So it was so non-traditional, which I understand is not helpful for the listener. But the takeaway what I learned was you need a banker and you need a great banker that shares your vision and your understanding of the brand and the brand's value and your value. Number one.
Did you have that person?
We did not.
Okay.
And we also didn't have a proper business lawyer for this sort of transaction work. And we had amazing lawyers that we work with. You know, our closest legal person was our trademark lawyer who, you know, had been building our trademark portfolio all these years, which was incredible. But we didn't have a team to act on this. And that's what we need. So now we're like in these conversations and now we're like, oh, we need to put this team together. And we didn't even understand what these people did or why we needed a banker because we just met them and they wanted us to join. What do we need a banker for?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of time where we fumbled around through that process without these people in place and then getting the proper people in place.
How long did that process take?
It was a very excruciating long 13 months, which is incredibly long for a deal.
Yeah.
Incredibly long. So it was on and off a dozen times.
And are you happy now that you made the move?
Yes.
So what is next for the Laundress?
Yeah, so we had our understanding, made it happen. And, you know, it's exciting. I built this baby. This is very much my baby. The products are my baby. Our team's my babies. And I say that I sent my baby to Harvard. You know, that's how I feel about it. Unilever is an incredible partner. They have the funny part is I always wanted to sell to Seventh Generation. That was like my dream prom date. And then when Unilever acquired Seventh Generation, I felt like jilted. I was like, oh my gosh, my prom date just ditched me. Like, they left. So then the irony is now we're back with Seventh Generation together at Unilever.
You can hang out.
We're now like cousins.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So, but they're a great partner for us, not only with Seventh Generation as part of the portfolio, but they really have a very strong mission for sustainability that works with our eco business and our methodology, and really will only make it better, we can grow in that element together. And they also understood the value where we were a prestige cleaning company and they have prestige beauty brands with their masks. So they really saw our value as their prestige home cleaning brands to complement their mass market. So they don't want to make us mass. They want to keep us as that value and prestige, which is important because that's who we are.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important because when you do sell to another company, a lot of times they'll try to change the DNA of who you are, and that you've been able to really maintain that is incredible. Do you have a typical Laundress customer, and how has your audience evolved since starting the company in 2004?
Well, I actually love this question because the answer is not what people assume. So when someone's describing the Laundress to someone else in my presence, they'll say, oh, you know, it's this like luxury product that you only use with your finest items, like your designer this or that and, you know, only special things. And I'm like, oh, I cringe when I hear that because it is not, you know, this luxury product. It's a luxurious experience, but it is a product for everyone. And what that answer is also represents our customer. So our customer is incredibly diverse. We have a huge age range from early 20s to 70s. We also have a really interesting gender split. We have a ton of male customers, and we have income diversity as well. So what really that shows and explains our product as well, where everybody has dirty laundry and everybody has clothing and home items that are important to them. And early on in the Ask the Laundress I was telling you about was, you know, having that dialogue with all of these customers and with all of these people and the things that they're trying to save or the things that that's important to them. So, you know, I got emails about, oh, I'm buying my wool and cashmere shampoo to wash my brand new sweater, my brand new, you know, cashmere sweater that was from J. Crew or from Ann Taylor. And this was not like a $500 sweater, but it was important to them. And so you had a customer who's maybe buying a $100 sweater, under a $100 sweater, and willing to spend $18 for the care. So
interesting.
Yeah. So very diverse and really also showing the economic value of the product, where you could spend $18 for one bottle of wool and cashmere shampoo, which yielded you over 30 washes and was, you know, cheaper than dry cleaning two sweaters. So there's that value proposition as well.
Yeah. So what's next for you personally and business and for the laundress?
Well, personally.
Getting some sleep after your trip, right?
Yeah. It's an exciting time. I'm excited to be able to be growing with Unilever and being able to leverage some of their resources. And, you know, some things are not as easy as it is when you're an independent small machine. But also, you know, having exposure and resources and cash and is certainly fun. And to really be able to focus personally on the creative of the brand and the making, you know, incredible products and continuing to make even better along the way and focus on the branding and the creative parts that I love.
All the fun stuff.
All the fun stuff and sort of shed some of the not so fun stuff I've done all these years.
No, that's definitely quite an accomplishment. Yeah. And it's really incredible, the company that you and Lindsay have both built. And it's been incredible to hear your story. My last question for you is, what does being an entrepreneurista mean to you?
Oh, it means having a dream and making it come true.
I love that. Well, where can everyone find you, follow you, and of course, buy your incredible products?
Yes. So thelaundress.com to our full e-commerce experience, as well as sign up for our newsletter on our website and also enjoy our content with our how-tos and favorite things and all of the amazing resources we have and searching how to get a stain out and what fabric to wash and all those wonderful things.
I love it.
And then we also have a code for the Entrepreneurista listeners.
Amazing. What is it?
Yeah. So it's 25% off. Ooh. On thelaundress.com with the favorite code Entrepreneurista.
Yes. All right, you guys, use code Entrepreneurista for 25% off. And I can tell you, I'm sitting here next to these bottles that aren't even opened, and I can smell how good they smell through the bottles. So your clothes are going to smell incredible, and so are you.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Stephanie, and this is the best business meeting I've ever had.
Entreprenista is produced by Mouth Media Network for Socialfly. Copyright Socialfly, all rights reserved. Thanks for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network, audio for business.